to the Crooked Forest podcast. I'm your host, Holly Noonan, and we will be discussing affordable housing for sensitive people and all aspects of paradigm-changing trends in natural building and how it relates to your health, like living in neighborhoods that are designed specifically for the microbiome. We'll also explore creative solutions for affordable home ownership, like community land trusts and cooperatives, and delve into permaculture and regenerative systems design. If that's what you're interested in, you're in the right place, and we're glad you're here. I'm your host, Holly Noonan, and today joining me is Larry Roybal, who has been an adobe builder all his life. Larry is 84 years old. He's lived in Silver City since the early 70s. When he came down here from Corrales, where he grew up, and we're going to talk about his history, his building career, some technical details about some of the houses that he's built and some restorations he's done. And man, does Larry have some amazing stories. So let's get started. Welcome, Larry.
Well, hello there.
Let's start by you telling me a little bit about where you grew up. You just told me that your mom spoke mostly Spanish at home, and that your family is from northern New Mexico many generations. Is that right?
That's right. I'm talking about 1690 is when Ignacio Roybal came. And I guess ever since then, there has been a clan of Roybals in northern New Mexico.
So you mentioned that there's actually a Roybal house that's on the National Registry of Historic Places up in Santa Fe. Is that right?
Yeah, it's in Ocona, New Mexico, which kind of was at one time a pueblo. Now I think it's just in the middle of the area where the Pahuaki Indian Reservation is, amongst the 19 other pueblos. He came after the Indian Revolt of, I guess it was like 16-something, and then 10 years later they came back. He was part of the group with Vargas that came back, and I guess they were thinking of reconquering, but what happened when they came back is that the Pueblo Indians had made friends with the Great Plains Indians of the Cheyenne and had worked with them in developing horses. So that's one of the interesting things is that when the Spaniards came back, they saw that they were friends with the Apaches and the Comanches, who were war tribes, which the Spanish respected a great deal because they had been chased out of certain areas, even Pinos Altos, by the Apaches. So they must have been a very formidable force to deal with. So they, of course, made friends and settled with the Indians in a peaceful manner, opposed to what had been happening before in the early conquest of New Mexico, or colonization, I guess is a better word.
Wow, yeah. So I'm looking at the website for the Ignacio de Roybal house, and it says the Roybal family and their descendants were prosperous ranchers and leaders in the village of Hakona. The patriarch Ignacio de Roybal y Torrado was a veteran of the reconquest of 1693. This is a long time ago. This is your sixth great-grandfather?
Yeah, we're talking, 14 generations.
My goodness. Okay.
And so the interesting thing is that a lot of the people here in New Mexico, especially my family, we never left. You know, we've just been here. And that's kind of interesting for most people to always ask me, well, how long you been here? I said, well, my family's been here for 400 years. So that's always a strange look on people's face, because most people haven't even been in the United States that long.
Right. Right. Yeah, wow. Well, you just showed me some pictures of this house, the Roybal house up in Santa Fe. Tell me a little bit of the details. Like, those are very thick walls, and you mentioned that they basically dug down into the earth to go. So you're going down into a house.
You go down into the house because of the weather being so cold in northern New Mexico. They get a snow in September. It usually doesn't melt until April. So they had to deal with that in a way that was functional. In other words, you go down 4 feet and you reach steady state.
So when we talk about like traditional design, are we talking about the Pueblo design, or was there some kind of mashup between like the Spanish who came from Europe and brought any architectural elements from European architecture?
Well, the only thing that the Spanish added to the Pueblo design was that they, with the help of many Indians, I guess it could be termed, they were actually enslaved to build these incredible churches. And that's one of the architectural format that they used. But other than that, the basic design was actually dictated by the fact that the Spanish were left there in northern New Mexico. They were actually deserted, so they had to use what was there. In other words, that became an architectural element of design and function, is to take advantage of the buildings that were there. And so...
So they didn't really improve on them much.
They didn't really improve on them, and so the basic design is basically using the elements that are around you, like a lot of wood. They did mud floors, which are kind of interesting, but a mud floor is very difficult to do unless you have, you know, 50 or 60 years to work on it.
Why that much?
Well, the floors that I had seen, I have seen people try to do them, because they were actually in an area where they would do everything from dressing an animal to, I guess, using it to wash things on, because what happens, it looks very much like a tiled floor in one big piece. I have had people do wood mud floors, but they have to use other chemicals, you know, like people will use different oil bases, which, you know, can outgas quite a bit, but that's what they use now for mud floors. But originally, it was just over a long period of time. The floors had just become a floor.
Right, okay, sort of cured over decades.
Yeah. So
did you grow up in an adobe?
No, I did not. I later on built my own adobe in Corrales outside of New Mexico. This was back in the 60s.
But let's get back to, like, where you, when you were first starting out, you got drafted in 1962, but you didn't go to Asia. You went to Europe, and this had an impact on your impression about architecture.
Well, when I was going to the university, I was in liberal arts, and I was taking a lot of art classes, because that's what I professed to wanting to do, was be an artist. I started taking photographs. I had a nice Nikon camera, and I went around photographing architecture. And I noticed that I took a picture of a trailer one time on the horizon, and I had a picture of an adobe on the horizon. And it dawned to me that that adobe looked like it belonged there, like it had grown out of the earth, where that trailer just looked like it was not supposed to be there. And so that was one of my first observations. But then when I was drafted and sent to Europe, my eyes really opened up on what they call sustainable building, because you see buildings there that were, I know I met some Tyroleans. They were in northern Italy. And they invited me to a gathering, and I was standing there next to this big decanter of wine that they used there, drinking some wine. And I started talking to this young man who was a Tyrolean. And I said, "You speak English so well." He says, "Yeah, well, we're obligated to speak German." He said, "But we're Tyroleans." And so little did I know that the Tyroleans had never been conquered. And the castle that they had there, you could see why, very formidable. And they took me to the armory, and the armorers there were all 2 meters. These men were 6 feet tall, the Tyroleans. And that was another reason, of course, that they, but the thing that got me was they still lived in that castle.
Oh, wow. Is this on the border of Italy and Germany?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, it's by the Dolomites.
Okay.
And so that was one of my first impressions. I saw this castle that had been there for 700 years.
Was it made out of stone?
Yes, the whole thing was stone, but beautifully done. Wow. I mean, the window details were carved. A lot of carving was done in those days when they built it, and they had these masons that did stone carving besides just being a mason.
Wow.
That was another skill that they had to incorporate into
their next level. So what did that make you think about American architecture?
Well, that's what, but kind of surprised me, because I said, is it that we lost contact, because we're all basically Europeans in the United States, but we didn't take anything with us? We didn't bring any of the architecture, you know, or even the manners, the manner in which we speak. Even the manner in which we eat food is different than they eat in Europe. During the frontiers days, we had to put our knife down so that we would make sure that we were being peaceful. But otherwise, we had to hold on to it. Where in Europe, they don't put the knife down.
Right, they just keep eating, right?
Yeah, they just keep eating. So there were these little things I started observing, you know, being from a country bumpkin in New Mexico.
Right.
It was just very eye-opening to see, you know, the vast difference.
And so your family has been here 14 generations, but your family is Spanish-American, right? Like.
Yeah, well, you know, I had my DNA checked, and I have.
You did?
Yeah, and I have 54% Iberian. I have 19% Pahuaki, so the Roybals were busy up there.
So you have some native in you.
Yes, I have some native in me. And then the other thing is that where the Roybals come from in Spain is on the southern coast of Galisteo. So they were fishermen. In Spain. So I also have Italian and other Mediterranean bloodlines.
Okay.
I'm sure
everybody was busy.
Everybody was busy. And so what happens at the very end is we just become a bunch of mutts, you know, because
that's right.
Because there is no real. There were instances that, as an example of the Spanish being here, when they were deserted, they of course were intermarrying with the indigenous people there.
Yes.
That were here.
After a while, you just lose track.
You just lose track. But I say, I just gave up on that. I went to a certain extent. I have an uncle who was a pharmacist there in Albuquerque, but my mother's maiden name is Garcia. He's a Garcia.
Okay.
And he was very interested in finding out more about what his heritage was, so he went to great detail. He went to Utah.
Okay.
He has an incredible geological tree. And so the interesting thing is that there are like maybe 30,000 Roybals now.
Wow.
And they're all over the place.
Uh-huh.
In other words, there was a congressman who was actually my great uncle who was a congressman there in Los Angeles.
Uh-huh.
And they even have the Roybal Library there in LA.
Oh, wow.
So we had the opportunity to get out, but not much.
So that's so interesting. Like you're saying, like when Europeans came to the United States, they lost their architectural heritage in a lot of ways. But when your Spanish ancestors came to northern New Mexico, they basically adopted the architecture that was here because it was better than anything they could bring.
Well, exactly. And the reason that they came up to northern Mexico, the Pueblos, is that there in Jemez, there's a mine of perlite.
Okay.
And so the Indians would use that as a plaster.
Okay.
So when you put perlite on the wall, it catches the light, the little crystals, so it sparkles.
Mm.
So the advanced scouts saw these pueblos sparkling, and they say there's the cities of gold. That's where that came from.
I see.
So they got all excited in Mexico City and sent this great big expedition to northern New Mexico to look for the cities of gold.
To find the gold.
Yeah, and so here they find these houses that are plastered with perlite, and they say, oh, God.
So well, how did you know, when did you know that you wanted to build for your career?
Well, it was that photography. You know, I started looking at Adobes, and then after I came back from the service, I decided to build a house, and so I looked around, and that's where I showed you those terrones.
Yeah.
That was the first house I built.
Oh, tell us about terrones. They are actually hunks of sod, or?
Yeah, there's a, on the Rio Grande Valley, or the Rio Grande River, at one time had these incredible bosques, or swamps.
Yeah.
And so what they did during the 20s and 30s is they put in lateral ditches to drain the to drain the swamps, basically the bosques.
Mm-hmm.
When they got to Isleta, which is south of Albuquerque, the Isleta Indians said, you can't put a lateral ditch on this side of the river because we use that land for our terrones.
Mm-hmm.
No one knew what the heck those were.
Wow.
But they didn't put the lateral ditch there. So in going to the different pueblos, I saw this particular element. I said, that's interesting, a sod.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to the governor there, and I asked him if I could buy some from him.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, how many do you want? I said, well, I want a lot of them. You know, I want about 10,000 to build a house. And he said, okay. So he wrote a little contract. I remember it was on like a paper bag, you know.
Uh-huh.
He gave me the permission to go down there. So I went to where they make them or where they're made, and there's just a kind of a lagoon that during the flood season, it floods full of water, and then, of course, when it dries out, it comes back. That particular area there has a weed, actually, it's an herb. Mm-hmm. It's called hierba de manso. They go in and cut it like you would cutting a lawn, basically cut it all off, and they run strings, and they cut them out of the ground. And they're really quite interesting because they're very big. They're about 8 by 14 or a foot, but then they're real thick. You know, they're about 8 inches to a foot thick.
And so like it's this rectangular hunk of sod that's full of roots.
Right.
And then when you lay them as bricks, what happens?
Well, the interesting thing is that the when it's flooded, what material is coming down the river is sedimentary clays.
Perfect.
And so the sedimentary clay with the sand makes a real nice adobe, only it's stabilized with the roots. And so when they lay them, they lay them with the plant going down, so they start growing to each other, as I showed you in those photographs. And not only that, but the byproduct of the material that's there creates this aluminum sulfide, which makes the water run off of the walls.
Oh, wow.
So that's why they've been able to be there for so long.
Oh, that's amazing. So I'd never heard of this. I was so excited when you said this, that the bricks are actually laid in a way so that once they are laid, the roots continue to grow for a while and integrate the structural integrity of the wall.
But what's nice is that root system, though, has created air spaces.
Okay.
So they have a real good R factor. Opposed to adobes, which are solid.
Really?
Yeah.
They have a higher R factor.
Well, sure, because they have all of those holes in it.
Wow.
You know, insulation is just holes.
That is fascinating.
Yeah, it is. And that's what kind of fascinated me, because I was, you know, looking for something to get into. So I built my first place with these tarrones, and then being in Corrales, there was a lot of, it was a viable building material there in Corrales, a lot of adobe houses.
So then you built a house for yourself?
I built my house for myself, and then I started building other little projects there in Corrales.
Okay.
There were nothing big. Most of them were a lot of walls. I did a lot of different types of different adobe walls, which kind of, in urban areas, people like to, you know, create privacy with these adobe walls.
Yeah. So what made you come down to Silver City in the early 70s?
Well, my big hobby was backpacking and fishing.
Okay.
My dad used to take me to all the neat places up in northern New Mexico to fish, and I found out that all the places up north always had someone there when I went. So I came down to Glenwood one time, and I had a brother-in-law who was very interested in adobe. I think I told you he and I got together because we were interested about the fact that New Mexico was being threatened by warehouses to take out the adobe code. So we collaborated and got this publication going. And so
you were actually involved in the acquisition of the data that was used for codifying the 2015 earth and building codes in New Mexico?
Well, there were a lot of us. I wasn't by myself. In other words, there were a whole bunch of people that were interested in keeping that alive.
Okay.
I mean, there were some real gods of adobe called Galmin is one of the first. And Lumpkins is another one. These were artists that came from back east that just fell in love with adobe and got into building commercial buildings, post offices and you know, places, government offices and city halls with the Santa Fe style.
Okay.
With the you know, the large parapets and exposed beams and corbels. That sort of element was introduced into the commercial buildings. So it became a kind of a format for New Mexico, and I thought it would die out.
I'm so grateful that they clinched that, because right now, like, that is a huge boost for people who want to build adobe in New Mexico.
It is, and it was interesting that they were so interested in trying to take out competition, but that's what this all about.
Warehouser
was, they did it in Texas. They took out, you can't build out of adobe there.
And that's because they didn't want the competition for the conventional building materials?
Right.
Yeah.
Because there weren't any big projects. The biggest one I ever got involved with, I have a partner up in Albuquerque. He's from England. Julian Cull is his name, a real, real gentleman. And he and I got into trying to do some work for low-income housing for the Pueblo, Laguna Pueblo.
Okay.
They put out a, they wanted to build some adobe. And so we drew up the plans and presented them as a planned unit development. and it was refused. HUD said, we don't recognize it as a viable building material.
HUD didn't like Adobe.
They didn't like Adobe. So we couldn't do that. We went on the site and we got a hold of individuals that would do a homeowner's permit. And we would kind of get away with it, but those were kind of, it was before the energy code was introduced. That was another problem. Once the energy code was introduced, then the typical Adobe, which was 10 inches by 14, and where that came from, I have no idea, because it's not metric, and it's not, it must have been a shoebox that a man had to start making Adobe.
Right, okay.
It has, and I don't even like it, because I'm in a corner. When you put a 10-inch there, you're only lapping it 4 inches.
Uh-huh.
You know, structurally, it's not that.
It's not practical.
Yeah.
But so I mean, how did you end up building an Adobe house in front of the HUD in Washington, D.C.?
Well, they were looking for people to do a display for the, they had recognized Adobe as an American architectural form.
Uh-huh. All right.
And so they have what they call a, I don't know, it's like a building fiesta or festival that they have there for the 4th of July.
Okay.
And so there was a publication, I think we got through at Adobe News that I was telling you about, that was looking for artisans to come to do Adobe work in Washington.
Okay.
At that particular time, God, I think I was working in a grocery store here or something. Because, you know, there wasn't a time in the late 70s and 80s that there was much going on here as far as construction is concerned. The mine was trying to get rid of all the unions, so there's a lot of conflict there. So, and most of downtown was boarded up. And so I took the opportunity to do that. I said, sure, I'll do that. And then all the guys that were invited, I was the one that I guess could give them more information. In other words, I had a gift of gab, you know, that said, hey, this is the guy we want to go out there and tell them about Adobe.
So you actually loaded up all the materials onto a train car in New Mexico?
There were different projects. In other words, for us, we had corbels and beams. We were going to use what they call a 1C juniper latilla.
Okay.
In other words, you cut the 1C juniper log, what they call cedar here, but cedar does not occur here. It's a 1C juniper. I keep getting corrected on that.
Okay.
But anyway, we'd split them and we make those for latillas on top of the beams.
Got it.
That's what we used in Washington. It'd be more what they used to do.
Uh-huh.
In other words, the latilla was what you would have in the ceiling opposed to rough cut lumber, which came later when they had a sawmill.
Got it. But all the Adobe bricks were brought from here?
Yes. In other words, yeah, we had a Santa Fe blue-eyed Indian truck loaded up with Adobes, and then it would be put on top of the Santa Fe Railroad and took to Washington and unloaded at the mall.
Oh my goodness.
It was a kind of logistical dream. I said, how are we doing this? And so it was a lot of fun, but I didn't like the atmosphere. Was very difficult. You know, the humidity is very difficult to work on.
Oh, I hate it so much.
From here.
I just got back from the East Coast, and it's just, oh, it's so oppressive. But you just told me that you had to use the mud from the Potomac, though it was yellow and polluted, for your mortar?
Yeah, well, that's all we had. So I looked, I had to find, you know, something to use. And, and it had some binding materials. I don't know what it was. It was like a sedimentary or something that mixed with the sand that made enough mortar. Like I was telling you, though, mortar's not that that's not that important.
Mm-hmm.
It's having them level and plumb, you know,
right,
to make them stick together.
Yep.
So,
which you were doing with your hands.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was kind of a funny thing that happened, that we forgot our trowels with. Yeah. So we got all the way up to the top, as you saw there, and it was a lot of fun, but then we had to take it down, and they went, part of it went to a permanent display.
Wow.
All of our carvings, because we heavily carved all the corbels.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun.
Tell me about the woman who made the Orno.
Well, there's another woman that's even more into it. Her name is Clarita, and she's very famous in Santa Fe for making indoor beehive fireplaces.
Uh-huh.
And they wanted one there, and of course I told them, if you want to have authenticity, you better get a woman that is known for doing those there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so we took Clarita with it. Boy, she's a powerful woman. In other words, I'd be laying adobes and I'd get close to her fireplace, she'd get my building floor on the ground, you know. She said, what are you doing? She said, don't stay away from my house. Stay away from my building there. I said, okay, I'll just go. But I mean, she was a real character. Mm-hmm. But I mean, we took these people that were experts in their field, sure. You know, so. Mm. But the ladies that did the ordinal, we were worried about who was gonna be boss. So for about 2 days, everyone would say, well, I don't know if I'm gonna take orders from that guy, you know. Who's he, you know, because we're all strangers. 15 of us put together. Oh. And so while we're arguing, they already had an ordinal built, and they had a way of building it real fast. An ordinal is like a dome. Uh-huh. To build a dome correctly, you have to cut the adobes like almost a pie shape. Uh-huh. Cut off the corners. Uh-huh. So when you go around in the corner, they stay together. Uh-huh. And you bring one in 3/4 of an inch on each course until you get to the top.
Okay.
But what these ladies did, they ran rebar.
Okay.
They made a web of rebar and then put up the adobes in one day. The next day they were firing up and making things come out of there, you know, bread.
So while the men were still trying to figure out who was in charge, yeah. They were cooking food.
I'll have to get you some pictures of that, because they had a great big billboard sign there of the Taos Pueblo, and they had a picture of the Pueblo there as a backdrop for them.
I love it.
I mean, it was a real festival. But
wow, what a story. Amazing.
Well, it was interesting, because HUD was the building that was right behind us was the HUD building, which I thought was really great.
It was right near the Lincoln Memorial. That he just showed me a whole page story with photos in the Washington Post or the newspaper from Washington.
No, this is the Albuquerque.
Oh, is that Albuquerque? Okay, yeah, wow. I all these pictures you just showed me, I would love to figure out a way to get those online. Like, amazing. Amazing history.
Well, you can see the building in the back there. See it behind the ordinal?
Yeah. Yeah. It's the mall. You're on the National Mall.
Right.
With the obelisk and everything. Amazing. So what an adventure that was. Well, and so then you came home from that and you just kept going, started building adobes for a career?
Yeah, I just started. Well, what happened was I was lucky because there wasn't much going on here because of the mine closing for a year in 81.
In 81, yeah. Okay.
So... there was a man, Albert Parra, mm-hmm. whose family, Don Gaspar Garcia, built most of the buildings in Old Town there in Albuquerque. It's okay. Kind of an older plaza there.
Okay.
And Al had worked with him and knew a great deal about adobe. So he asked me if I could run a crew in Santa Fe for him. He had two houses to work on. Mm-hmm. One of them was in Jemez. It was for the head surgeon of Albuquerque. Mm-hmm. And he wanted a place that he could take his older patients once he's retired.
Okay.
To, you know, keep checking on them. So we worked in Jemez. But then in building, you have move-ons, mm-hmm. what they're called. And I used to put in the contract, I would allow maybe two move-ons. But what a move-on means is you have to shut down what you're doing for someone else to come in there, like the electricians don't want anybody around
right.
when they're doing a top out or you know, the tile layers. So during during that time, he had another project in Santa Fe. So I'd go to Santa Fe, between Santa Fe and Jemez, they're doing these different houses.
So you'd be working on one or the other.
Yeah, one or the other. So and then once I did one in Santa Fe, then of course they wanted me to do another one. And so there was about 3 years that I spent, I'd go work 10 days up there and come back for four.
Down to Silver.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so those four was kind of nice because I could bring materials down.
Oh.
You know, because Silver City is like building on the moon. You know, there as you might know, the supply for materials is very limited.
It's pretty limited.
Yeah.
Especially we got to change that.
Yeah. And so
your first project here in Silver City, I don't know if it was your first, but one of your first was you built the pagoda in Gough Park.
Right. Built that in 76.
So you got a bicentennial grant for the mm-hmm. in bicentennial was 1976, and you got a $10,000 grant, and you pulled off that pagoda for $10,000.
Yeah, well, it, you know, it was a lot of sweat equity, but I mean, I enjoyed doing it because I was there.
Yeah.
and it was a lot of fun to try to build something. Because I decided when we designed it, I'm going to build a big one. You know, uh-huh. The Albuquerque Symphony can sit in that thing.
Right on.
It's big.
And so you just showed me the newspaper article about that, too. The posts, the upright posts for that gazebo were from 1915.
and they were 1913.
And they were buried in the waterworks. Were they lampposts or something? And you
they took them down to the main street. They've gone through these different feelings about what Main Street should look like. Uh-huh. In 1913, they took all those cast iron posts down because they thought they were too old-fashioned.
Oh my God, they're so beautiful.
If you look at them, they have like 2-inch cast iron. I mean, that's why I didn't mind using them. I said, they're strong.
Yeah.
I mean, they won't take much lateral movement. They'll crack, you know, uh-huh. They don't have any flex.
Which means that's one of the reasons that it's not a good thing that they took the little tiny structure on top that allowed the cupola that allowed for airflow, so the whole roof wouldn't lift up, and they removed that.
Well, they won't do much now. It won't be harmful because the trees there are all 50 years old.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
That was a parking lot.
Okay, wow.
And
okay.
So all those trees were 50 years old, but wow. They're big enough, I think, if a big wind came. Yeah, the only problem I have always had, and I understand I went to the city about trying to get rid of the liability, is that for the jazz festival, I mean for the blues festival, they take the railing off. And the railing is what is giving it lateral support.
Oh, no.
You know, little do they know, because I didn't have any money to put the corbels in,
okay.
You know, where the vertical meets the horizontal.
Right, right.
So
the railings are structural.
Right.
Do they know that?
They know that. Okay. I followed them now for 50 years.
Oh, like my God.
The guy who is was the manager there of the metal building place out there, as he and I have gone round and round. Every time I see him, I gave him a hard time. I know I was invited to the president's house one time. They had a presentation, or they had somebody that was performing, and they invited everyone to come to his house, and uh-huh. That's where I met him. And I said, "Oh, I grabbed his hand, and I said, why did you take my cupola off, and where is it?"
Yeah, right. In your weather vane.
Yeah, and he said, "Well, I don't know." I said, "What do you mean you don't know? You're the one who took it off." So that has always been, every time he sees me, he runs away, you know, because he knows I'm going to give him a hard time about where's my cupola and my weather vane. But anyway.
So you've built like 20 houses in Grant County all around?
All around, you know.
Pinos Altos?
Different sizes, a lot of additions, a lot of add-ons, a lot of restoration.
Okay, you've done restorations in addition to building from scratch. Why don't you tell us about one of each? Like, tell us about a building that you've done from scratch here.
Well, the one that was from scratch was for Jim Elliott. He was the head of the Chamber of Commerce in the 70s when I was doing the gazebo. Mm-hmm. And he approached me and says, "Larry, do you know anything about Adobe?" I said, "I just happen to know a little bit about Adobe."
Yeah.
So he said, "Come and look at my site." I said, "Well, we can do a lot here." So we made the adobes at his site.
Okay, you made
them.
Okay.
Yeah, and so I found a couple of boys that could make about 100 a day, which was amazing.
Wow.
And we made them down in this big draw. And I said, "Oh my God, we've almost got our adobes made." Rainy season came, and that draw filled with water, and all the adobes were washing down.
Oh no.
So
where did you get your clay from?
Well, it was very interesting, because I went all over the place. So up north, our best source for making adobes is the lateral ditches that I was telling you about earlier.
Uh-huh.
They clean them out every year, and they dump them to the side. This is kind of a funny story I tell you, is that I was going to build a house there in Corrales, and the guy wanted me to go to the bank. And when I went to the bank, the guy says, "Well, Larry," he says, "we don't know too much about your reputation." He says, "I'm afraid you're going to have to put up a bond." So I said, "Okay, I'll put up a bond." I said, "What do you need?" He says, "Well, we've got to have at least $10,000 liquid asset." Mm. So I said, "Oh, no problem." So the banker said, "What do you got?" I said, "Well, I've got about 50,000 adobes." He said, "What?" I said, "Yeah, they're about a buck a piece, you know, that's worth a lot of money." He said, "Okay." So I got ready to leave. He says, "Larry, before you leave, do you mind taking me over there, showing me the adobes?" And what it was, I had 5 acres where I showed you I built that first house.
Yep.
It was right on the lateral ditch. Okay. And I had these huge piles of all this adobe dirt. And I said, "There it is." And he said, "Larry." I said, "Well, they haven't been put into the right shape yet." I said, "But they're still there. I mean, that's what it is." And he said, "Well, okay, so I'll give you a break on that." But I had to go get, you know, some more money. I had to finally come up with, I think, $1,500 in cash.
That's too funny.
For my bond, you know.
Oh my goodness. But, so back to, is it Jim Elliott's house?
Yeah, so Jim Elliott's house, we...
Where was that house?
It's out on Cottage Sand. I thought you had gone out there. It's on Archer Road.
Okay. Uh-huh.
But anyway, what I found there were some Santa Barbara terracotta tile.
Okay.
The most beautiful. It has little blues and reds and oranges.
Wow.
And I got them for the porch. It's a long porch. It's about a 30-foot porch that I got for Jim's. But he had a Simpharam.
What's that?
A Simpharam is an adobe machine.
Okay.
You make one at a time.
Okay.
You put the material in this chamber and it has a long fulcrum. You pull down the fulcrum and it squeezes it together.
Is it sort of like a compressed earth block?
Yes, that's what it is.
Okay.
But we found a good stash of material, so we did all the floors. Uh-huh. With the Simpharam. It's still there, as a matter of fact. Basket weave pattern there. That's the one I thought you had seen, the Archer. It was a big house.
I'd really like to see that house.
I mean, it's over 3,000 square feet.
Oh, my God. How long did it take you to build that?
It usually takes about a year.
Okay.
Know, I mean,
and it's all single floor?
Well, not really, because I don't like to do cuts.
Okay.
Not, I know I'm from the flatlands, and where we used to work there, like in Corrales, it was agricultural, so the fields were level.
Uh-huh.
And so you can cut your foot and just measure, you know.
Uh-huh.
Where here, everything's on a
right
on a slope. So.
And you like to do 10-foot ceilings?
Oh well, yeah, of course. I mean, your eye is really funny. You got a high ceiling in here, so it makes it look bigger. Mm-hmm. Your eye sees three dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go into a room, if it has a low ceiling, you feel that.
Yeah.
If it has a high ceiling, you feel that too.
You feel that. Yeah, it makes a small space feel bigger.
Oh yeah, I've done that many, many times. I can do it. A living room is 10 by 12 look gracious, you know, because you can put holes in the walls.
Uh-huh.
And that's another trick I use is I try to put everything in the walls, the refrigerator, you know, bookcases, nichos, nightlights. You make little places in the wall.
Oh, wonderful.
So it becomes three-dimensional instead of just a flat surface.
Wow, very sculptural.
You would have openings there.
Mm-hmm.
And just maybe 6 inches into the adobe wall, you put a painting in there.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it becomes... more three-dimensional than just flat, because that's what I don't like about sheetrock houses is they're plain vanilla. You know, you go into a room and it's your eye is challenged constantly going around looking at.
Yeah, it's not just your eye. Like for people like me, I literally cannot live in a 2x4 and drywall house. I can't be well in a house like that. I actually literally have to live in a masonry house, and I do live in a masonry house now, but it's still not as good as an adobe. It doesn't feel as good as an adobe. This is a cooked brick house.
Yeah, well, what kind of brick?
This is that's the brick. It's 8x14.
Oh, okay.
It cooked, and it just feels different. Like, I can really, it's not just aesthetic for me. It's actually a life and death. Like, I absolutely need to live in a masonry house. And there's a lot of people like me.
I thought it was one of those penitentiary tiles.
Mm.
The penitentiary in Santa Fe made a extruded, bright yellow, I mean, red tile. It had holes in it.
Hmm.
And they sold it. There's a lot of houses. I just found one here that had that material.
Was that cooked?
No.
Okay.
They were just baked. Yeah,
it was baked. Okay, yeah. Yeah, I didn't know that you could bake adobes. You just told me that you can build an Orno and you can bake your adobes. Never heard of that.
Well, it takes a special mix. In other words, in order to, you're working with the same principle as pottery.
Uh-huh.
In other words, it has to be almost a pure clay.
Uh-huh.
And then you have in that a firing agent like sawdust that disappears. It gets so hot they actually disappear. So you have this very porous material that turns out orange.
Uh-huh.
And I used to make them all the time for details.
Okay, so you didn't build a whole house out of this?
This was like an artistic
flair?
Yeah.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, what happened is I was in Mexico. I used to go down there and go to the construction sites and... everybody get mad. Where's Larry? He's over there watching these guys build. Because the interesting thing about Mexico building is that on the beach, they build these beautiful structures, and they don't have contractors. They have architects. An architect is in charge of the building. So you have these beautiful structures, you know. And so I used to go and watch them do. The most difficult was the vaulted ceilings.
Uh-huh. Oh, man. Those are amazing. There's this one guy that I follow on Instagram that does vaulted like arches and domes. Domes out of brick. Unbelievable works of art.
Yeah, no, they are. And so I tried. I can do one. I did one, but mine is very time consuming. You have to go around and just come in
a spiral.
But I used to go watch these guys. I couldn't believe they were throwing boxes.
Amazing. Yeah.
And the thing is about Mexico being a third world, they don't have any tools. You know, they'll have a little level and a hammer, and they build these big houses
out of that.
You know, out of, with not much, but they do a lot of plastering. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of beautiful, indentations in the walls and stuff. I got into that too, doing, you know, you can carve adobe into these designs and then plaster them.
You know, I wonder, like, what affordable housing means in Mexico. Can you do affordable housing and adobe together?
Well, adobe is not used that much in Mexico. They're talked into building concrete blocks.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know the aesthetic and energy saving qualities that adobe has now become.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it isn't new. You know, we call Mesopotamia, you're talking 8,000 years ago,
right.
They were begging to build.
It's the original sustainable building.
And a lot of the structures are still there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that we didn't bomb in Iraq. And
not just carbon neutral, but carbon negative. And if you know, basically the difference between an expensive adobe and an affordable housing adobe is if you know what to do with it. Basically, it's skill. It's knowledge that needs to be passed on. If we lose this knowledge, then all we have are the options of the industrial supply chain.
Well, that's why I made my mind up to get involved, because the things I've learned in the last, in my life about adobe, I'm already 83, and there's not very many people that I can, pass these things on to. You know, I have a couple of people that will listen to me and come to me, to understand, because there's a lot of details that are kind of unknown. You know, how far beyond a window should the lintel be, is it 12 inches, 14, is it 16 inches, There are a lot of details like that that I have learned, and it has... A lot of, I have made a lot of mistakes, but I recognize them now as a point of knowledge, knowing not to go there again.
Right, yeah.
That sort of thing.
One of the stories that you just told me that I thought was really cool and illustrates why we need your advice and why, you really should be informing like modern projects right now. You were just talking about how banks will give you money for a build in stages. They'll give you money after the foundation is up, and then they'll give you the next set of money after the bond beam is done. So between when the foundation is done and the bond, like, get really efficient about laying brick.
You have to. So that's what happened, is that I see people doing a project and I try to show them how to do it fast.
Yeah.
And so everyone has their own idea about how to do adobe, because there isn't a standard unless you go up to northern New Mexico and get into building with some of these crews, because they've taken adobe up there. God, they do these incredible plaster where they put a lizard on the outside,
right.
And out of adobe, you've probably seen it.
It's
a lot of the
gorgeous.
Architectural deals have they've gone over,
but next level.
But
it's not affordable now.
Well, that was pushed up there. I did a house up there. I helped on a house for, he was a sports announcer.
Mm-hmm.
But he had a house there. They build these houses at entertainment centers.
Mm.
That's one thing I really learned about how to do a big gourmet kitchen, because they build these very party pads, big dining rooms and large functional kitchens.
For entertaining.
For entertaining. Outside, have to make things look old. We used to beat the beams with chains and shoot them with a number 10 shotgun to put. I've learned, one of the best things I ever learned, though, that I should pass on, is how to preserve pine. Because what happens in pine is if you try to use pine that has been cut in the summertime, it's full of sap, and then it has a tendency to go to where it wants to go if it hasn't been held down to dry.
Mm.
I had the opportunity to work with a sawmill here in Riverside, where he cut all the wood for me for a year in advance.
Oh, because otherwise it'll literally drip?
Well, not drip, but it'll crack and twist. And, it does all these horrible things here in the Southwest. The ultraviolet rays just do a number on pine.
Right.
And one of the worst things is if you leave it outside, you don't do your best to seal it, it'll turn gray and then sort of black.
Mm. Okay.
You know, I'll show you some buildings they've done around here where they make these real beautiful pergolas out of vigas and stuff, but they don't seal them and they start turning gray.
Oh,
you know, that's what
happened. What a shame.
So what I found is I was working with a guy who was from the East Coast that did, his family were shipbuilders.
Okay.
And the way they seal ships, the wood on the ships, is what carpenters used back in the turn of the century called a beeswax finish.
Uh-huh.
And literally what that is using beeswax, or you can use, I used to use just paraffin wax.
Okay.
So you have melted paraffin wax. You have your oil, which mm-hmm. I used to use tung oil, because mm-hmm. it's neutral, it stays clear.
Mm-hmm.
Linseed oil turns umber.
And it stinks.
And then that much of paint thinner.
Uh-huh.
The paint thinner takes that heated wax into the wood.
Okay, yep.
And so
penetrating.
After about five coats, you have about that much of the wood that's wax. It is impervious to water.
A whole inch. Wow.
I mean, and that's how you make posts and beam and corbels stay the same.
Okay.
Because if you leave them alone, I've had people say, Larry, come back and look at this pergola you built 2 years ago. It'd be twisted and cracks. Because pine is very different. So a lot of people will go to fir.
Uh-huh.
Fir is stable. It won't do anything. It'll just stay nice and tight and not crack.
Okay.
It's a different wood altogether.
But, so, Larry, why don't you tell us about one of the restoration projects you've done in town here? You were just telling me about the courthouse. Is that the one you want to talk about?
Well, that is kind of an interesting one because it had many faces.
Uh-huh.
Originally, it was built for Hearst's daughter.
Okay.
And when he came to build the church up there.
Who was Hearst?
Randolph Hearst.
Okay. The Hearst, that guy.
The big man, yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Yeah, he was in Pinos Altos. He built the Hearst Church there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, anyway, the courthouse, as I say, original part of it was built for his daughter. Later on, once Silver City decided to have Pinos Altos as the county seat, mm-hmm. they built the courthouse.
Okay.
They added on to that. The reason it's there is that's where Bear Creek comes out. That's where it originates. It's right there at that site.
And then this is in Pinos Altos or in Silver?
Pinos Altos.
Oh, Pinos Altos. Okay. Yeah.
You know, right down from the Buckhorn, uh-huh. you'll see that little place where the water crosses the street.
Yep,
that's where Bear Creek starts.
Okay.
And it goes all the way to Cliff.
Got it.
But anyway, later on as it became a courthouse, they went in and did a really nice job then. But they have a room there that was the courtroom. And then next to the courtroom was his chamber, I guess. And then on the other side of the where the court was being held, there was a room that had like a steel pin sticking out with a round ring on it. That's where they would shackle you when you take you up there to have a court.
Okay.
And then outside is this ancient cottonwood tree, just the bark, I mean just the hull of the tree is there, but that's a hanging tree. That's where they used to hang people. They have photographs of
it. So you were just talking about the shackles in the courthouse?
Yeah, so anyway, that room had the little shackles. We took that wall down to make it bigger.
Okay.
Make it into a, it became one whole big room.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had a potbelly stove in there, and I built an adobe fireplace with a carved mantle mm-hmm. in the living room. And then—
Oh, you do wood carving too?
Yeah.
Wow.
That was what was really part of my building, is I would carve all the lintels.
Wow.
You know, I'll have to show you pictures. I'll have to show you the houses.
I'd love to see them.
And we, you know, I have a son that was. I get kind of irritated with him because he doesn't understand the skill level that he has, but he's better than I am. He's a real good wood carver. He does painting also. And he has that eye hand gift.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where he makes a line, I make a line. Why can't I make that look like it's supposed to? You
know, and he can just do it effortlessly.
He does eyes, faces, the whole thing.
Wow.
You know, but his wood carving is what I want to get him into the Spanish market up there because he does retablos and santos.
Is he up in Santa Fe?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm trying to get him into the preservation. There's the Santa Fe Historical Society mm-hmm. has a mm-hmm. preservation project going where they're looking for people to.
Yep.
teach people how to preserve some of those old structures.
Hey, this is important work, right?
Yes. And what's interesting, though, is Santa Fe has the Bucks.
Mm.
And I could never figure out what it was until I got up there and found out where those people are from. What it is Los Alamos is right up the hill.
I see.
And they have 30,000 guys up there making big bucks. Mm-hmm. And they have, well, the best example, if you ever have a chance to go to the opera, mm-hmm. it's world class. And the libretto is that thick, full of sponsors from Los Alamos. Mm-hmm. They built Santa Fe's art scene.
Yeah.
In other words, I went to a place and they had this little painting that I liked, and I took it and I was going to buy it, and I pulled out my wallet and I gave them $21. He says, "No, that's $21,000." I said, "Oh, excuse me." Oops. But I mean, that's the level of art there.
My
now,
goodness.
Though.
Do you ever miss it? Do you ever miss
being up there? I go up there for the novelty. I really like to go up there a lot. Mm-hmm. I like to go to La Fonda. Last time we were there a couple of years ago, we stayed there at La Fonda, and we went down to have breakfast, and they had quail tacos.
That's so fancy.
That's very Santa Fe.
Talk about for a minute what the La Fonda is. It's an absolutely iconic historic building in the middle of Santa Fe.
Right. It's right down in the plaza there.
It's like many, how many stories? Like three stories?
Yeah, well, there are four stories, but it's from the turn of the century. What happened is the turn of the century had, you know, O'Keeffe there, and mm-hmm. she had an art colony of artists from back east that just changed the whole appreciation of that area because they documented it in an art form. Mm. And then guys like Dalmeen, who got the ability to put it into commercial buildings in northern, the post offices and, you know, town halls and stuff, took that same, I want to call it Santa Fe style. Like what I call frame is Santa Fake. There's a lot of fake Santa Fe.
Right, it's designed to look like an adobe, but it's actually, yeah. And that's really, you know, to me that's dangerous because it's built out of OSB, and the you know, indoor air in those buildings is horrible.
It is.
Toxic.
I'm surprised I've lived this long because I was opposed to, we used to use xylene, for instance, and I found out later it's one of the most powerful carcinogens. But what has happened because of California, you can't buy an oil-based sealer anymore. They took them out of the market because they were carcinogens. Masonry sealers.
I mean, they take them out one at a time, but honestly, there's 84,000 chemicals swirling in our environment. They're affecting all of us. And those of us who are chemically sensitive can feel it, but not everybody can. And it's actually better if you can feel it. It's not good if you can't feel it.
Well, I know my significant other has air purifiers going all the time. She has been affected by asthma. She has to be careful.
You guys live in an adobe, though, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, no, the one I live in, though, is a Santa Rita house that we got and remodeled.
Oh, a Santa Rita house was actually moved from Santa Rita when they did away with that?
They could move all of them. That's one of the things about them that's so amazing, is that the way they were built was structurally extremely strong.
Wow. Were they designed to move in case they had to move them?
Yeah, because they were on piers.
Okay, so Santa Rita houses, for the listeners, Santa Rita was a mine that was here in the early part of the century, I think, and they basically decided that they were going to dig the mine underneath the village of houses, so they moved all the houses. And they moved them mostly, I think, to Hurley, right? But some of them
They're all over the place.
Okay.
And they're all different sizes. The one I have, you'll have to come and see it, but we did... I pretty well gutted the inside, but made it higher.
Okay.
You know, the same old thing. I just took it right up and
made
12-foot ceilings and stuff like that. And
what kind of wood were they built out of?
Well, most of it was fir. They had a lot of good fir at that time. It's all gone now.
Like old growth, probably,
Yeah, old growth. And it's a very interesting story there, and I don't know. Yeah, so there's a lot of dark history here that... It's all coming out now because now this is what we're doing now. We're talking about our past.
I think it's important that we talk about our past.
Yeah, and they did that up north. They got all, I mean, they've had groups up there that have cut off the ankles, you know, of Oñate, because he used to do that. One of the tribes, the Acoma Indians, killed his brother, so he went up there and chopped all the grown men's ankles off or some horrible thing.
Oh, my God.
So he was sent back to Spain. Spain was in the Inquisition, but... They didn't go that far where they were torturing people like that for no reason at all.
Wow.
They sent him back, and that's when the Roybal came with Vargas.
Wow. Some seriously sadistic Europeans showed up.
Yeah. So, exactly. Well, it was during the Inquisition. You can't get any worse than that.
You can't get any worse than the Inquisition. Yeah, so, it's the next level.
So we have this history, you know, here in the West. And then we have that other history over there in Charleston that I'm learning about, about the proprietors is what they were called. The plantation owners were called proprietors.
Wow.
But be that as it may,
yeah.
People now are understanding, you know, that the past is the past, and we're more into contemporary, we're being more civilized in the fact that we're recognizing our faults.
Well, I tell you what, the next generation of builders, this is so interesting to me. These are all millennials and Gen Zers who are going to natural building programs in Yestermoro and community rebuilds, and they have a design build program in Bluff that's in association with the University of Utah. And these kids who are interested in doing the natural building and are in architect programs that want to do a natural building focus are, you know, they're all, not all, but a lot of them, it's very normal for them to be committed to a culture of inclusivity, where if they are privileged, they recognize their privilege, and they understand that for learning to happen effectively, for your mind to open, you actually need to feel safe. And that for people who are non-binary or, you know, from oppressed cultures, people like women being in the construction trades, you know, there actually needs to be some conversation and dynamic on the build site so that people who are non-traditional builders can feel safe so that they can learn. And so what that makes is these build site cultures that are very inclusive and very diverse.
Well, I understand that, because that's a lot of times my crew used to look like they had just landed and they were pirates, you know. They mm-hmm. would have their bandanas and their long hair and mm-hmm. beards and stuff. And mm-hmm. I have some photographs, and they say, "Well, is that your crew?" "Yeah, I just got them. They came off of a ship." They look like a crew of pirates, you know, because in that type of work, it isn't the cleanest work in the world. And mm-hmm. especially in the days I used to use asphalt emulsion.
Oh, you did? You used asphalt emulsion? How long did you do that before you realized that you shouldn't?
Well, what happened is those adobes from Mill Creek were heavily, and you know, they use a lot of them out. They were up to about 5-6%. Uh-huh. But to use the same mixture, you use 5 gallons of asphalt emulsion in a 55-gallon drum or 50 uh-huh. gallons of water.
Okay.
Gives you a 10%
yep.
stabilization.
Right.
So they're waterproof.
Okay, yeah, but
the only problem is the outgas.
The outgas into the room you're living in.
Right.
So not ideal.
No. We got away from that, and then I found out early on about really looking at adobe and seeing what it was. That's why I'm saying, when someone says something about adobe, I want to make sure they understand what it's supposed to be.
Yeah. Well, tell us right now, what is it supposed to be?
80% sand and 20% clay. If the clay cracks, you add an additive like straw, pine needles, sawdust, mm-hmm. gravel mm-hmm. to bond it so it won't crack. The most important thing is it has to be kneaded like bread. You have to mix it to change the direction of the platelets.
Okay.
It's a very simple thing. If you ever see a mud puddle and you drive across it, when you squeeze that mud, you go back and that mud that has been hardened is very hard.
Yeah.
The reason it's hard is the platelets have been locked.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's what I had to find out, is why. You know, why is adobe strong? So it's very simple. In other words, there's nothing you can add to it that makes it any stronger.
So you don't believe in stabilization?
Not at all.
Okay.
And you don't have to.
4% Portland or 4% lime. You said there was a one use for lime. What was it?
Well, the lime is important for a mortar because it'll push the water out if you're laying adobes in the cold.
But not in the brick.
Where it freezes at night. See,
I see.
Mine, lime will not freeze with water in it.
I see.
And so when you come back to bed your adobes the next day, the walls are just full of water dropping down off of the walls.
No.
From the lime pushing the water.
Wow. So other than building when it's cold, you want your mortar to be the same stuff that your bricks are made of?
Ideally.
Yeah.
I mean, ideal. I mean, 20 years ago, before the cost of transportation got out of hand, I used to be able to bring them in from the Rio Grande Valley.
Mm.
There were guys out in the southern part of, down in Las Lunas and Belen,
mm-hmm.
They lived on the bank, you know, mm-hmm. the river, and they had good adobes. And I've done some work there. The last one I did was on Peterson Road, a big, beautiful studio. The man who moved there was a sculptor, so he wanted a 12-foot ceiling.
Oh, was this the one with the tram wall?
No. Oh. That one in the tram wall is in Santa Fe.
Okay.
He was a lithographer.
Oh.
And we built this place that was big enough to have an apartment on the site, because he would invite these Indian artists, which is really popular up north, the Indian art, and they would because that particular art, they do the work on a stone and then they pull it off of the stone and the lithography. So he had limited editions. And so he wanted this room to be absolutely clean. So we put that foam on because it has no windows on it. So no air. If that little fly speck was on his numbered, he would have to give a discount.
Oh my goodness. So, I mean, my understanding of living in a masonry house, because of the house that I live in, is that they can be dusty because it's, you know, the plaster and the bricks can be dusty.
Well, if you got infiltration.
Say more about that.
Infiltration is what happens when the wind blows past the structure. Mm-hmm. It sucks out the air in your house. Mm-hmm. And what it does is bringing in
fresh air.
But within that fresh air, if you wanted to look and see, is get a flashlight and have total darkness and look around your windows and stuff, and you'll see these particles.
Yeah. Dust
flying into the air.
Because
I always used to wonder, I said, God, we caulked the windows, we have wonderful weather stripping, and why, where is this dust coming from?
It's actually from the outdoor air, not from the plaster.
Right, yeah. It's from the outside.
It's interesting, like, just to circle back, when you're talking about, like, building, using mortar from the Potomac, even though it was yellow and polluted, and then building houses with adobes that were made with asphalt emulsion. One of the things that I've learned in this journey of restoring my health from getting sick in a way that makes me sensitive to my microbial environment is that one of the most powerful reasons for adobe and why they are so helpful for people who are struggling with chronic health issues is that when you build them out of clean stuff, like really good soil, that is from a forest that is healthy or a landscape that is healthy. When you are talking about the, what were the names of the sod bricks?
Terrones.
Those had a microbial ecosystem that was intact and old. And the microbial ecosystem in the house that you built with those bricks would be beneficial for someone's health. That's one of the things I've learned is we have to be very intentional about not allowing chemicals into our indoor air because you're sleeping with it. It becomes part of your body. It comes through your skin.
I know that. I know I have 260 foreign particles in my body.
You counted them?
No, I know this from all the different things I've used. You know.
Yeah. If you think it's a good idea that Grant County has a reliable source of compressed earth block that you can design the mix on, let me know.
No, the adobe machine works. I say it's just a matter of having the right mix, and that's something that people can't believe that it can be so strong. Just a earth module. Floridas, there was a huge lake there.
In Las Cruces?
No, in Deming.
Oh, in Deming, right.
And so I used to get these big trucks, you know, that hauled, you know, 50 yards of cement, I mean, material at a time to make adobes.
Okay.
And it was an Aunt Jemima pancake mix. In other words, you just add water and it was a perfect adobe.
It was perfect already.
Because it was sedimentary clay.
So sedimentary is better than alluvial?
Alluvial has organic material and it won't bind.
It won't bind. Okay, it has to be sedimentary. And the only local source of sedimentary clay is Arenas Valley coming down from the Two Sisters?
That seems to be it. I used to look everywhere. There was another place up there by Bear Mountain Lodge. I got some oil, some earth there. But I go around digging, you know, looking for soil to make adobe. I make an adobe and see, because the only way you can tell is if it doesn't crack.
Right.
One way you can do it is you fill up your sample in water like this.
Yep.
You add water, you shake it like that, and it'll separate. You'll see the clay and the sand materials.
Okay, and it went at 80-20. You want it 80-20.
Ideally.
80 sand, 20 clay.
Yeah.
It has to be sedimentary clay.
Yeah, but I mean, you can go from there. In other words, if you're lacking one, you can add more of another. Uh-huh. But you can always use binding, but you don't use this imitation material.
Yeah.
Because one, you're bringing in an expensive, you're adding a price to those adobes by putting a material that you have to bring from
some
foreign place.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very easy to see. If you want to do research, just go up to northern New Mexico, and there's 19 tribes with all adobe structures.
Right.
Some of them 4 and 5 stories high.
Right.
And they're all out of natural adobe. They didn't have to put anything into those adobes. So what I'm saying, it's it stands to reason that you have to use common sense a lot of times and not try to improve something that can't be improved.
Hallelujah.
You know, it's that's where the simplicity of Adobe comes in.
So this is what makes me so frustrated when I hear that, like, the building industry didn't want competition, so they put the kibosh on Adobe. They wanted to have the conventional building materials that are 2x4s and drywall be predominant, and now what's happening is people are getting sick. And they're building houses that don't last as long as the mortgages last.
Oh, no, that was one of the things I discovered real easy, because I was telling people, you know, that you have an incredible investment. $200,000 in 30 years. You will have paid probably double that from amortization. And so what do you have after 20, 30 years? You have something that will require a lot of maintenance.
You have to start over.
And so housing basically is high maintenance. Any house, you have to take care of it.
Yeah, you have to take care of it.
And so you try to find something that has the least amount of maintenance. The houses up north, they have built-in maintenance. Because a lot of the places there, they do mud plaster, so you have to do that every couple of years. So that becomes like a cultural, I don't know, it becomes part of the cultural ethnic group of people that are living that way. And so you find that, you know, in the Pueblos. And they're quite happy. It was giving Anthony piano lessons, and she was from Tennessee. And she says, I've never seen a place that has such a lack of culture. So I said, let's go up to Santa Fe. So I took her up there. And of course, we went to the Santa Fe Opera. That she couldn't believe that was here. But then we went to the Pueblos, and the first thing she says, "What do these people do?" I said, "Well, you can see what they're doing. Most of them are artisans. They do turquoise. They do pottery." I said, "But they don't want to go to work in the factory. Of course, now they want to really empower themselves with their traditions and their language." In Albuquerque, they have the Indian Cultural Center now, huge place right in the middle of town, where they are able to show their works. And do their ceremonies and do their dances. People say, well, Larry, how come those dances last so long? I went to one and they last like 3 hours. They're out there dancing. I said, that comes from when the Spanish were here. The Spanish didn't want them to speak their language. So what they did is they would do their songs and they'd repeat all the phrases for their children. That's how they passed the languages, is through their dancing and their singing. Because you probably notice it's always a repetition of the same phrase, and that's what they're doing. And so it's like a modern showing their children how to keep their language.
I think it's becoming obvious to more and more people, no matter what your ethnic heritage is, if you're an American mutt, like most of us are, that the indigenous ways of life, where you are making art, and sharing singing and dancing with the people that you love, and passing along the things that you're proudest of into your culture to your children, and eating together and having seasonal rituals, that way of life, which used to be characterized as, you know, so old-fashioned, is now what it means to have a high-quality human life. That actually is and always has been more sane than living in modern American families where everybody pops a freezer meal into the microwave and eats it in their room while they're on their phone. Like, that makes no sense. And it does not create a healthy human being that's integrated into history, into family, into place.
Well, you said the key word, family. I mean, people like Mrs. Warren, though, she brought the East Coast here with her architecture, with her brick buildings and stuff.
Oh, she was so interesting. I'd love to learn more about her.
Speaking of which, I'm working over there on the Warren House.
Are you?
The house is quite beautiful. Let me talk about some really nice carpentry work.
That was like the only house that didn't get washed away in the big ditch flood, right?
Right.
Yeah. And then on top of that, Elizabeth Warren built 50 brick houses in Silver City. And you were just telling me that a lot of them had apartments for the mining widows, so they could have an income.
Now, she was altruistic, you know, we didn't find that too often here anymore.
And she started a brick factory, she built a bunch of the sidewalks here.
No, she was and I, as a matter of fact, one of the people I'm working with now, Michelle Kennedy, she's about 80, but she's an architect, builder from Taos.
Okay.
She lives here. Okay. She does my drawings for me.
Really?
Because she does AutoCAD, you know, which is...
Yep.
And so But we have a lot of time talking to her because she was at a hard time up in Santa Fe because she's a little woman.
Yeah.
And she would run these crews, you know, these Adobe builders, you know, uh-huh. the infamous pirate look.
Right.
And she had a hard time, of course, at first, mm-hmm. you know, because of the fact of them men being too macho, or mm-hmm. what is the other word? Well, you know what I'm saying.
They, yeah.
They want to respect a woman's decisions, but then they found out that she knew what she was doing, so okay. she did quite well. But she's moved here.
Wonderful. And, we love that.
She lives a little adobe on Little Walnut there. But,
oh, I love it.
But I'm always surprised, and we're both, you know, in our 80s and still want to build, which is
right.
kind of real funny.
I love it. But, I love it.
Once you do Adobe, you can't.
There's no going back, right?
There's no going back.
There's no going back. It's the best thing. It's the best building material.
It's the best. Well, not only that, but what's important is that, you know, if you'll introduce me to the architect and stuff, I may be able to help him with some of the details that he may be not clear on.
Okay.
Because there's a lot to the detail. There's a little details in the infrastructure that.
Absolutely. We got to get you two together.
You know, like how to put your plumbing in a wall.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, and you can put it in the adobe wall. A lot of people fur out and put it in a.
Yeah. You know. We're not going to be furring out though.
Yeah. So you dig in your material and you put your pipes in it and you spray it with foam and you cut the foam off and it's in perfect insulated.
Yeah, but that's foam and interior air. We can't do that.
Well, all the foams are that way. I thought
all
there
of
was
them.
A.
Yeah, because it's actually the plasticizer, the stuff that makes it. Flexible and expandable, those are the toxic. It can only be an outdoor air. It's not something that we can use in our projects,
yeah.
but we'll find some.
Well, that's what I'm saying. There are little techniques that I have found that can be helpful.
Yeah, yeah. We'd love to hear it. I'd love to get you two together. And I would love for you to show him your photos. So
yeah, well,
we'll make that happen. Thank you so much for joining me today for the podcast. I really appreciate this. I'd love to do it again. You obviously have thousands of good stories. And so for our listeners, what we did after recording this podcast was I took several tours of houses with Larry Roybal that he had built, and we put together an online photo album. So be sure to go to the show notes so that you can click the link to see the photos of all the houses and the projects that we referred to in this recording. That's our show for you today. Thanks so much for joining us for the Crooked Forest Podcast. Hop on over to crookedforestinstitute.org to subscribe and share with one of your friends. Thanks again. See you next time.